When I was a kid, my parents taught me not to use the phrase, "Oh my God." And as a kid, that was a lot harder than you might think it was, because everybody I know, all over the place, everywhere, was saying that phrase. My teacher said it, my friends said it, everybody on TV said it. There was no escaping it. And people say it all the time. Every circumstance, every situation, when people are happy, when people are sad, when they're surprised, when they're bored, when they get good news, when they get bad news, it is everywhere. People just can't stop saying it. It was actually really hard not to say it. But I think that was part of the point. Part of the point was that if there actually is a God, then he's not mundane. He's not boring. That he's not commonplace. Because I think we have a way of, even in our language, taking things that mean something and are really big ideas, really big, important ideas, and making them seem small. And don't we do that in life all the time? It works the other way around, too. We have ways of taking things that we wish we weren't such a big deal and making them seem absolutely huge. In fact, maybe even this week you've experienced that. There are things in your life that you wish weren't a massively huge deal, but they seem so big. It might be your workload. It might be your schedule. It might be financial issues. It could be relationships that aren't going the way that you want them to. It could be the amount of pressure that you feel. It could be the amount of expectations that you feel are heaped on you by other people. It's so interesting how we sometimes can take the things that are supposed to be most grand, most awe-inspiring, and as we overuse them, maybe misuse them, think about them in different ways, we can diminish them. While other things that we wish weren't such a powerfully negative influence in our life, things that we wish couldn't control us, things that we wish didn't push us in one direction or another direction in life, seem like they're insurmountable, seem like we'd never get past them, things that we think we could never change. And I wonder if there are times where the way that we think about God, we have brought down to almost the mundane, boring level. Have you ever experienced that? You know, there's so many different avenues of entertainment and things that grab your attention in this world, and yet you go to read your Bible and you feel like it's so irrelevant that you can't even stick with it. Or you have the opportunity to sit and to communicate in the presence of Almighty God in relationship with him, and you can't even stay awake through your prayers. And maybe like me, you've scratched your head at certain points and wondered, how is it that something so grand, so amazing, so awe-filled could become so mundane and so boring? And yet the things that we wish weren't taking over our lives, and our sense of well-being and our purpose and our confidence seem huge, like we could never get past them. And that's what this series is about. I hope over the next 6 weeks or so, we will have opportunity to change our perspective. Maybe have an opportunity to take our view of God, which for some of us is, let's be honest, has become just kind of this boring philosophical thought or a stack of beliefs that we're supposed to hold, we think we're supposed to hold. And maybe have an opportunity to see God in a different light and to allow him to rekindle that sense of awe, that sense of wonder in the Almighty God whose presence is all around us. And maybe even in that process, as we catch a view, I hope, of who he is and what he's doing in our lives and in our world, some of those other things that are taking up far too much space in our minds, taking up too much of our attention, taking up too much of our emotional life, we might be able to not say that they're insignificant, but place them back in proper perspective. And to live lives that are more confident, to live lives that are more peaceful, that are more filled with joy, lives that are directed by the purpose that was created within us by God, our Father, and our Creator, that we might live the way we were designed to live. So I hope you'll join us, not just today, but over the next 6 weeks or so as we dive into that. If you're brand new, I want to welcome you. If you're a student at MAC and maybe this is your first year or the first time as you come back in September that you've checked us out here on a Sunday morning, a huge extra special welcome to you. We're thrilled that you're here. My name's Dave. I'm the lead pastor here at Westside. It's my privilege to serve in this community. And we want you to know, if you're new, that we want to do whatever we can to make you feel comfortable, accepted, loved, so that we can share with you, and that hopefully at some point you can share with the community around you the love that God has for all of us in this world as we see him do things that we could never do without him. So welcome. We're glad that you're here. I'm going to start in a story in the scriptures way back in Exodus chapter 3. So if you have a Bible or an app on your phone, you want to follow along. In this series, we're going to be working through what for the Hebrew people in their scriptures was the biggest story about who they were, their biggest story about their relationship with God, the biggest story about their history. It's a story of the Exodus. It starts this morning. We're going to start with Moses, who becomes the leader of the people in this story. It's Exodus chapter 3. Exodus is the second book of the Bible, so if you're looking for it, Genesis, Exodus, you'll find it, and we're starting pretty close to near the beginning of the book in chapter 3. And here's what it says. Verse 3. One day, Moses was tending the flock of his father-in-law, Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led the flock far into the wilderness and came to Sinai, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a blazing fire from the middle of a bush. Moses stared in amazement. Though the bush was engulfed in flames, it didn't burn up. "This is amazing," Moses said to himself. "Why isn't that bush burning up? I must go and see it." When the Lord saw Moses coming to take a closer look, God called to him from the middle of the bush, "Moses, Moses." "Here I am," Moses replied. All right, a little bit of context, a little bit of background. Tell you a little bit about Moses' life so far, what we've learned if you read through the first couple of chapters in Exodus, just to give you a little bit of context of what Moses is heading into and what he's thinking, what he might be feeling in these moments as this is happening. Moses' life so far. First, he was born into danger. The superpower of the world at the time was Egypt. The Hebrew people had become basically enslaved in Egypt. The Pharaoh saw that the Hebrew people were, they were growing and growing and growing. They were having all types of kids, which meant there were more and more Hebrew people. Pharaoh saw this as a threat. If all these people grow up, if there's another generation that becomes strong, if they outnumber us, they might try and overthrow us. And so Pharaoh decides that he's gonna put out a law that says all of the firstborn male children of the Hebrews will be killed. Well, Moses is born to his parents, and obviously they're trying to make sure that doesn't happen. So his mother takes him, puts him in this little basket, and puts him in the river. He's born into danger. He's born into threat. But then he is miraculously saved. It seems crazy. You put this little baby in a basket, put him in the river, and you think he's probably doomed. And yet he's found, and he's brought to the daughter of Pharaoh. And Pharaoh's daughter has mercy on him and says, "This little kid, we can't kill this little kid. We've got to save him." And so they save him. And then eventually he's brought in as her son, which means he grows up in the household of Pharaoh. He is given a huge opportunity. It means he was probably raised with an education that most people would have killed for. He was probably given opportunities to have places of power and authority that the vast majority of people, almost everybody else, would never have had. Given an opportunity to have an incredible life living in Pharaoh's household, being part of Pharaoh's family. But he left Egypt in disgrace. One day, Moses was out and he saw a Hebrew person and an Egyptian fighting. And Moses steps in, and of course he's concerned because he's got these Hebrew roots, but he grows up in Egypt in a lot of ways like an Egyptian. And so he gets right into there, and he ends up striking the Egyptian and killing him. He buries him and cuts him up, covers it up. But the next day, people come to him and said, "We know what you did. We saw what you did. We know how you deal with conflict." And all of a sudden, he's disgraced. He's disgraced from the Egyptian people, but also his own Hebrew people as he lashed out in this kind of violence. And so he runs off, leaves in disgrace. He happens upon shepherd who has flocks, kind of weasels his way into the family. He ends up being a shepherd. He's doing a dirty job. A lot of people don't want to do. It says in these verses that we started reading that he was out in the wilderness with his flock. You got to think, if he's out in the wilderness, he's out in the desert, how is he feeling when this happens to him? When he comes upon this bush, you got to understand, for Moses, it sounds like it was a pretty ordinary day. We don't even know specifically what he was doing or where he was going, except that he was shepherding his flocks, the flocks of Jethro, his father-in-law. Probably means that he was hot, he was thirsty, he was tired. The threats that were against him were things like wild animals that might come and try and attack his flocks, his animals that he would have to fight off even at the risk of his own life. Those are the things that Moses was dealing with. He was dealing with his everyday threats, his everyday emotions, his everyday problems. Perhaps that day for him was fairly mundane and boring. Maybe it was just like every other day. Or maybe that day was stressful for him. We don't know. We're not told. Maybe the threats of animals coming and attacking had his heart going, had his heart pumping, had his breath quick. We don't know any of that except that Moses had gone from being in real danger, miraculously saved, given all these opportunities, and left in disgrace. And for all accounts, he was a pretty ordinary guy doing a very ordinary job, probably not expecting anything extraordinary to happen. He was doing what he would have done every other day and every other week, just like most of us. All of a sudden, he comes to this bush, and it's on fire, but it's not being consumed. And you remember, he looks, he says, "This is amazing. I've got to go see this," as he comes closer. I love this. When Moses leans in, do you know what he finds? That God is leaning into him. That it actually says there that when God saw that Moses turned aside to look at this, when Moses was willing to turn away from all this ordinary stuff, all the mundane, all the boring, maybe even all the threats, and say, "This is amazing, I've got to see this," he finds that God is leaning right back into him, saying, "Moses, Moses." He says, "Here I am." All of a sudden, he's in the midst of this interaction that is going to change his entire life. All of a sudden, everything that he had been thinking about that day, the sheep, the threat, the heat, the thirst, all of that seems to have disappeared. It is of almost no importance, although it is important that in this moment, his life is about to change. He steps closer and God speaks to him. Verse 5 says, "Do not come any closer," the Lord warned. "Take off your sandals, for you are standing on holy ground. I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." When Moses heard this, he covered his face because he was afraid to look at God. When Moses heard this, and you read the story and you kind of go, yeah, of course, something or someone is speaking to him out of a bush that's burning but is not being consumed. Moses all of a sudden covers his face. He's afraid to look. All of a sudden, again, everything else has kind of fallen to the background. We don't know where the sheep are. They're not talked about anymore. We don't know about the flocks. We don't know about the weather. We don't know about the threats that are coming from other animals. We just know all of a sudden he's covering his face and he hears this, "Take off your shoes. You're on holy ground. You are now on the land or the ground that belongs to a deity." And taking off your sandals in this culture would have been something that people would have done for someone that outranked them. A servant would do this in the presence of their master, for example. People, when they realize that they're in the presence of someone who is far greater than them, that is a normal thing. Moses, take off your sandals. This is not ordinary. This is not mundane. Moses, something is happening here. Someone is here that is different. You see, the extraordinary is becoming extraordinary. The natural has been overtaken by supernatural. Moses realizes that he is in the presence of an awesome being, and everything that was mundane has changed. And verse 7 says, "Then the Lord said to him, 'I have certainly seen the oppression of my people in Egypt.'" This is important. Moses, I know what's going on with your people. They're my people. I know their oppression. I know their hurt and their pain. I have heard their cries of distress because of their harsh slave drivers. Yes, I am aware of their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the power of the Egyptians and lead them out of Egypt into their own fertile, spacious land. It is a land flowing of milk and honey, the land where the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites now live. Look, the cry of the people of Israel has reached me, and I have seen how harshly the Egyptians abused them. Now go, for I am sending you to Pharaoh. You must lead my people Israel out of Egypt. Now you might read that or hear that and go, okay, Moses, God tells you to go. You get up and go. But you need to understand, burning bush or no burning bush, this is an incredible threat. If Moses thought there were threats as a shepherd, all of a sudden he's been thrust. If he accepts this mission that God has just sent him on, go to Pharaoh, he is accepting threats that he could have never imagined before. Here's Moses' greatest threats. As God says, I've heard everything that's happening in Egypt, and I'm sending you to go to Pharaoh to fix the problem. His greatest threats. Number one, Pharaoh. Only the most powerful man in the world. Number two, the Egyptian army. Only the most powerful military in the world. And number three, the Egyptian pantheon. Only the most powerful gods in the world. Moses, I'm sending you. Hold on a second. Do you understand who I am? Do you understand I was disgraced in Egypt? Do you understand I have no more standing in Pharaoh's household? Do you understand I've been out of the game for a while? Do you understand that I am not fit for this? Do you understand that I'm just a shepherd? Do you understand that I'm relatively a nobody? And you're sending me to go against the most powerful man in the world with the most powerful army in the world who worship the most powerful gods in the world. These are the things that control the world. These are the things that control people's lives, Egyptians and Hebrews the same. These are the things that everybody is looking to saying, they order what life is like. We live according to what Pharaoh says. We live in submission to what the army's doing. And we live at the mercy of the Egyptian gods. And maybe some of you throughout the years in high school or university, you've taken different classes on Egyptian mythology. We're going to get into that in this series, talking about many of the gods and the goddesses that they worshiped, that they depended on, that they trusted for everything in their life. These were the gods that they would go to and say, if I want this kind of life, if I'm to enjoy these kinds of things, if I want control, if I want peace, if I want joy, if I want children, if I want a family, if I want a good life, then you've got to fall in line with Pharaoh and the Egyptian army and the gods that they serve. And there were gods for just about anything that you wanted. Go and worship them properly. Trust them, and hopefully they'll give you what you want and give you what you need. I got to tell you something, that I believe that this tension in the story of the Exodus, this tension where God is calling Moses to go in and to do battle with all of the forces that everybody else thinks that they need to submission to, is essentially the story of Christianity. I believe that what Moses was sent to do, ultimately Jesus has done. I believe that when it says that God came down to do battle with the evil and unjust forces of their world, to bring his people up into freedom, is exactly what Jesus Christ has done on the cross. That he has come down to step into this world in order to do battle with all of the things that force us into a life that is apart from God, to do battle with all of the gods that we serve, that, by the way, are incompetent, to lift us out of freedom and to give us the life he's called us to. Out of slavery and into freedom. And the greatest threats that come against us, the greatest threats that threaten to push us away from God, that threaten to break us up, that threaten to live lives that are never matched up to who we actually are, the things that threaten our peace and our joy, the things that threaten love being ushered into the world in incredibly lavish ways. Jesus has come to do battle, and I believe that in your life and in my life, Jesus, even today and over these next 6 weeks, has come to do battle with some of the things that we're tempted to worship in order to get the kind of lives that we think we ought to have. And there will be moments, if you track with us, if you'll follow this, where you will feel uneasy about that, because some of these things in our lives are so powerful. We believe that we need to submit to them. We worship them as if they are our gods. That you may push away on this. They will be things like your money. They will be things like the expectations of other people. They will be things like your education, your status, the kind of relationships that you have, whether or not you're in a romantic relationship or married or not married, things that you hold so close to yourself that you think, if I lose this thing, if I lose this status, if I lose this reputation, that you feel like your life might be devastated, that you couldn't do without those things. They seem so threatening. It seems so much like you need to follow them around and please them and make sure that you fall in line. But I believe that Jesus came into this world to attack those things because they are making us slaves. They are gods who do not care for us or love us. They are gods who promise us the world and do not deliver. And I believe Jesus has come to do battle with those gods in our world and to lift us up into freedom. When Moses comes face to face with this kind of tension, hey, Moses, we're going up against the most powerful forces that you could possibly think of. There's two questions that Moses needs to answer, and I think there are two questions that we do really well to ask ourselves, whoever you are, whether you have a religious background or not a religious background, whether you've been a Christian your whole life or you're just checking this out. Two questions I think are really important for us. We'll see them in Moses' response. Here we go. Verse 11. But Moses protested to God, "Who am I to appear before Pharaoh? Who am I to lead the people of Israel out of Egypt?" God answered, "I will be with you, and this is the sign that I am the one who has sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God at this very mountain." Here's the first question that Moses needed to answer. Who am I? Now listen, this is not an existential question about his identity and how his emotions line up with, you know, his purpose and his career and job. This is a question about confidence. So if you're somebody who's ever wondered, what could I really do? Could I really change? Can I really overcome obstacles in life? Can I really be part of something that's bigger than me? Does God really want me to be part of his story in a significant way? Do I really have any power or authority? Maybe you're somebody who walks through life and struggles with who you are and what you can actually do, your confidence. This is a question we need to ask. It's a natural one. I've asked it. Who am I to do anything? Who am I to make a difference? Who am I to change some of the faults that I have, character flaws. Who am I to go up against powerful forces? It's Moses struggling with his confidence. God, I can't do this. And God's answer back to him is, I will be with you. And that leads to the second question, important question. Verse 13 says, sorry, we're done verse 13. Verse 14 says, God replied to Moses, "I am who I am. Say this to the people of Israel, I am has sent me to you." God also said to Moses, "Say this to the people of Israel, Yahweh, the God of your ancestors, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my eternal name, my name to remember for all generations." Second question. First one is, who am I? I have no confidence that I could do this. Second question, when God says, I will be with you, he says, well, then who are you? That's pretty important, isn't it? Who am I to do this? Yeah, you're right. You probably can't do this, but I will be with you. Great. Well, if we're going to go do this, then I need to know who you are. Who is actually with me? When I go to Pharaoh, the most powerful man in the world, and tell him, hey, all of your slaves, we're marching out of here today, who should I tell him's in charge? When I come up against the army, who's going to try and stop this and kill me to do that? Who should I tell them is fighting for me? When we start talking to our people about the kind of God that we trust in the midst of the pantheon of all the gods that they are trusting for their lives, who should I say is the God that has sent me? And the answer that comes to him, that God says, I love this. There's got to be an edge to this. He says, I am who I am. There's got to be part of this where it's like, you're asking me who I am? I am. Did you not see the burning bush that wasn't consumed? Are you not following yet? You know, there's got to be some kind of an edge, but there's more to that. I am who I am. And then he later says, tell them that I am came. And then later it uses the proper name that is given to God throughout the scriptures, his most intimate name for that he gives to his people to call him, which is Yahweh. And all those names, they're little changes that come from the Hebrew word to be. I am. I will be who I will be. Some of your translations, if you're looking at different Bibles, say those things a little differently. They're very hard to translate, except that we know it comes from this verb of being. I am who I am, or I will be who I will be. You're questioning who I am. I am. Some rabbis, teachers in the Jewish tradition, they've oftentimes talked about this name, and many people still in certain walks of Judaism, they won't even pronounce that name. It's so sacred. But some rabbis have said the best way to pronounce it is just by breathing. Kind of sounds like Yahweh. Breathe in, breathe out. Be reminded that God is everywhere. Be reminded that there's nothing anymore that is mundane and boring, but the presence of God is all around us. Breathe him in, breathe him out. Yahweh. I am who I am. Moses, I'm listening to the suffering of my people. Moses, I'm with you. Who's with me? I am. Well, but who's strong enough? I am. Well, who's going to really do all the work when we're trying to overthrow Pharaoh and his army and all these gods? I am. God, who's going to help the Hebrew people? I am. God, who can I rely on? I am. Who are you? I am. Mike Ayer says it really well in his book, talking about this passage. He says what God is saying is, in contrast to the pretender gods of Egypt, I actually exist. I actually am. I am real. Moses, I get all of this seems huge to you. The threats seem enormous. It's going to seem like you cannot do this. I know you don't have confidence, but I am. I am with you. Incredible thing to think about, isn't it? And when we read the story of Jesus, like I said before, I believe that what Jesus was doing, and often in the New Testament, he is called the new Moses. He is the new and better Moses. What Moses did becoming a shepherd of people when he was a shepherd of sheep, Jesus has done. Stepped into this world to draw us up, and he will threaten the things in our lives that we have been tempted to put in the place of God, that have been exalted in our lives to the point where we're trusting in them, when we call upon them, where we think we couldn't live without them. Do you know the kind of things that you're worshiping? They're the kind of things you think you can't do without, and yet the kind of things that very rarely come through for you. The things that bring up great anxiety in your life because you know you need to serve these type of things in order to get what you think you need or what you want. And the Egyptians called them out. They had names for their gods. They made them into kind of people-like beings with names and attributes and statues. But make no mistake, we continue to place in the position of God our money, our education, our grades, our performance, our reputation, our families. There's all kinds of things. And listen, most of them are very good things, by the way. But we've made them into ultimate things. Made them into things that we need to bow down to, submit to, work for, call out to, in order to try and get what we think we need and what we want out of life. And many of us are on a treadmill where we're working so hard to appease those gods, and yet we're not getting the follow through. We're not getting the kind of life that we thought they would provide. God is saying to Moses, I get how big all those things look, but I am, and I will be with you. Here's the reality. We are all worshipers. We're all worshiping. You don't have to be a religious person. We're all giving our devotion and our trust and our love to something or someone, some things or someones. But if Yahweh is God, if I am is God, then nothing else is. This is over and over and over again the claim in Scripture. That he is the God who is above all other gods, that he is supreme, that he is absolute, that he is powerful, and that he is loving, that he is the most real being you could ever imagine, that he is the one who can change and transform your life, that he is the one who is in ultimate control. And if Yahweh is God, then nothing else is, and no one else is. that if you're going to pick who's at the top, that who is the God of your life, Yahweh will say, it's me, or it's everything else. And I love what he had said. If we go back, skip back to verse 12, to Moses. When Moses is wrestling with this and he's trying to figure it out, and you know, he's doing battle with these tensions that are obviously in his mind, and he's dealing with all of these threats, and he's dealing with being part of a story that's so much bigger than his story, being part of what God is doing, being part of leading his people out of Egypt, even though it's the most threatening thing you could probably imagine in their culture and in their place in time and history. And here's what God had said. Did you catch it? It's back in verse 12 when he said, I will be with you. I will be with you, and this is your sign that I am the one who has sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God at this very mountain. I love that. Here's Moses. No confidence. No confidence in himself. No confidence that they could really do this. Wondering who this God is. God says, I am, and I will be with you. And Moses, here's how you're going to know. You're going to go to Egypt. You're going to do what I've asked you to do. You're going to change the world. You're going to see things that you never thought you'd be able to see, things that you never thought were possible. You are going to see me be a God that you could never even imagine, that is over all the other gods. And those things that you think are so great, the threats that you think are so unchanging and unchangeable, will seem so small in comparison to what I am going to do in this world and what I'm going to do in your life and what I'm going to do for the Hebrew people, that you're going to come out of Egypt and you're going to come back to this spot and you will worship. You will bow down and say, there is no God other than Yahweh. He is victorious. He has won. He has done it. Dear friends, I believe this is the call of Jesus to follow him. The call of Jesus to follow him in a countercultural way, to do battle with the gods that we are so tempted to worship, to have them taken from the ultimate place in our life and torn down, even though that's threatening and scary to us, even though it feels like we're losing the things that we most can't lose, even though we might be tearing ourselves from an attachment to some of those things that we think are bringing us to the life we've always wanted, but to take them down a peg, rethink our perspective, to put Yahweh and Yahweh alone back in that spot, and to watch him work in our lives such that one day we walk out in freedom and we bow down on our knees and say, Yahweh is God and there is no other, that one day you'll come out on the other side and there will be no mistake who is most powerful, no mistake who is most awe-inspiring. And what you will see him do, you could have never imagined, and we will worship. But Moses, you're going to have to go through this first. Moses, you're going to have to trust me first. Moses, I'm going to need you to take some steps back into Egypt. But watch me work. It's going to be threatening. It's going to be hard. But through it all, you're going to understand that all these things that have been elevated to godlike status will fall. And you'll come out. Back to this place, back to this mountain, back where we're meeting now. And say, oh my God. And worship. Tomorrow, most of us will wake up and do the same thing that we do every single Monday. Maybe for some of you students, this will be the first Monday that you'll do what you're going to do for the rest of the Mondays this year. But we're going to wake up, and we're going to go to our classes. We're going to wake up with our kids and have to change them and dress them and get them breakfast. We're going to wake up and run errands. We're going to go into the office. We're going to study our textbooks. We're going to make lunch and dinner. We're going to spend a little bit of time with our family. For some of you, that routine is starting to become mundane and boring, and you're wondering where the power is in life. And will anything ever change? Is this just kind of what we do going through the motions? Other of you will walk in tomorrow, and you will be overwhelmed by threats in your life. Maybe that's a financial challenge. Maybe it's things at work. Maybe it's starting school. Maybe it's not having a social circle at this point in your life. Maybe it's relational or family difficulties. Some of you, it's not going to be boring, but you're going to jump back into life tomorrow, and it's going to be overwhelming. My hope for you, my prayer for you, what I want for you so badly is that you will take an opportunity to lean in, maybe in the most mundane and boring, or maybe in the most threatening corner of your life, to stop and say, wait, there's something amazing here. I need to see this. You will look in maybe the strangest of places for the presence of God. And when you lean in, I pray that you'll find a God who is leaning right back into you. And I hope that you will see that this world is on fire with the presence of God, who's ready to transform your life, who's ready to take on the greatest threats that we are challenged by, and who is ready to lead you into a place of freedom. Heavenly Father, God, the one who is. We pause in these moments and we worship you. God, from the bottom of my heart, I want to say that you are my God and there is no other. And I pray, I know there are many who echo that prayer here this morning. God, all of us face threats and challenges. Some of us are in moments in our lives where everything's mundane and boring. Wherever we are, God, I pray that you would meet us where we're at, that as we slow down this week to look at things maybe in a different way, to look at people in a different way, I pray that we might see a world on fire with your presence. I pray that we might see you in places where we've never seen you before. God, I pray that you would help us to have the courage to lean in and allow you to lean back and threaten the things that maybe we've taken and we've placed in the position where only you ought to be. God, I pray that you would work in our lives such that we would come back around one day to see all that you've done and all that you are, that we would fall to our knees in worship and to say, there is only one God. He is the great I am. And that we would be able to trust you with our lives, trust you for our lives, trust that there is no other force, no other God, no other power that can rival you. God, we thank you for all that you've done in our lives. We thank you for all that you are. You are the core of existence. You are the creator. You are the great I am, and you will be who you will be. You have loved us. God, you've created us to worship you. And so I pray that as we sing, as we meet together, as we have some fun today, and as we go out into our everyday lives, whatever they look like right now, that we might know your presence, that we might allow you to transform us. And as we do, God, I pray that deep in our hearts we might bow and worship you as the one true God.